and welcome along to the New Music Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Adam Tinning. I'm joined here by the magnificent Johnny Hepbeer.
Hello, Adam.
Got your name right?
You certainly did.
Not Hepbeer. I don't know how people can get your name right. It's not that hard a name to say, I think.
It's just like two words together.
Hepbeer. So we're here with the New Music Podcast alongside Seaside Sessions. For new listeners who haven't tuned in yet, we record music videos, which you were part of.
Yes.
Way back in the first months of Seaside Sessions.
Yes.
And we try and post new music videos every day of new artists. And of course, Johnny is the famous gypsy jazz man.
Yes.
Is that a fair way to describe
Yeah, I'm a gypsy jazz guitarist.
Obviously your session was gypsy jazz. But some of the stuff we're going to talk about today is a little bit different to that.
Yeah. There's a few cool things going on. So.
So of course, we're going to get into everything about you as a musician and why you've chosen gypsy jazz as your particular favourite style.
Strange.
But we're going to jump into a couple of tracks. We've got five tracks to do today.
So okay.
A bit more than the ordinary. So we're going to go into track number one. Which is Porto Cabello.
Yep, this is my trio, Johnny Hepbeer Trio.
Okay.
And this is from our album, La Pomp and Circumstance.
Wow, what does that translate to?
We nicked it off the Elgar Pomp and Circumstance.
Yeah, of course.
That's it, so we just...
I love it.
But La Pomp is the rhythm for gypsy jazz guitar.
I see.
So it's
okay.
A play on words for that.
So tell me about the track. What's the track all about?
Meaning
behind it.
Okay, from what I know. Yeah. It was written by Django.
I was going to say, this isn't one of yours. This is a classic Django.
Yeah, because you've got to have a bit of Django Reinhardt.
Absolutely.
And as soon as we can't use a bit of Django Reinhardt, I opted for this one. It's a great track. He wrote it. He wrote the music in the later part of his life. And it's quite quirky. Sort of suddenly goes somewhere you don't expect it to, and then comes back to where he sort of started. So, yeah. So...
Brilliant. And did you say earlier, so we were talking before, obviously, recorded, and you said this was recording in a field. Is that...
No, that's the next
that's
one.
That's the next one. Oh, bloody hell, I've got my running order totally wrong. All right, so I don't want to play it just yet. I want to talk a bit more about this. So, obviously, Django, for any gypsy jazz fans, obviously, it's
the
most famous.
He's a little cherry on the gypsy jazz cake.
I remember when I first met you and you came and you showed me some videos. I think it might have been just after you left. You sent me some YouTube videos later.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. The guy's amazing. Something happened to his hand.
Yes, he was always already a well-respected musician. About 18 years old, there was a fire in his caravan. Cellulose flowers, they all went up, and he burnt down like his left side of his body. People kind of only sort of focus on the hand, but from what I believe, it's half of his body was actually quite badly scarred. But yeah, it kind of fused his third and fourth fingers on his left hand, and which is sort of pretty catastrophic.
Well, for a guitarist,
And so he basically relearned and developed a whole style that is, you know.
That is what we know as gypsy jazz today.
Yeah. He didn't call it was jazz because he viewed himself as a jazz. He was a gypsy that played jazz, but he probably viewed himself as a jazz musician because he liked Louis Armstrong and all the greats and everything. So, but that kind of cultural side of his background was still very prevalent in his playing, I think. And because of his disability, he completely knocked the guitar in a completely different direction.
Mm.
So it still inspires, you know, more than ever people today. You know,
absolutely. And there's not that many videos that online. There's
no.
There's videos you can watch.
Yeah, there's one really clear one that's on YouTube, which is really, really good. It's like a promo video for a song, J'attendrai, with Grappelli and the whole Hot Club of France. They're all there, and it's filmed like a pop. Like a pop promo video. It's incredible. I think it was discovered in the late 80s. But apart from that, there's a few out of sync sort of bits,
a
few seconds here, you know, badly dubbed guitar playing, you know,
yeah.
That sort of thing.
The guy's amazing. He is amazing. I'd highly recommend everybody listening to this. If you're interested in gypsy jazz, which I'm sure the listeners would be tuning into this podcast, you've got to watch these
Django
videos.
Django Reinhardt,
yeah. It's just... It doesn't make any sense to me how his hands are doing what they're doing. And you know, I find it amazing when I see you and other gypsy jazz players. How can your hands move that fast?
Lots of time spent indoors, Adam. Not many friends.
But knowing this guy obviously has the injuries that he had, it's amazing. All right, should we play this one?
Do it.
Let's get into it. Okay, so this is Porto Cabello. Okay then, so that was Porto. I didn't mention the trio. So that was Porto Cabello from Johnny Hepburn Trio. You obviously do Johnny Hepburn Duo and Johnny Hepburn.
I would do everything
solo. Was it hard to come up with the name of the band?
Well,
for the trio.
No,
Johnny Hepburn. Yeah, no,
it's sort of
it's quite natural, quite organic. So yeah, you obviously do everything right. You do just any number of people in any number of fans.
Yeah, it's all there on our YouTube channel.
We've just been talking about that off air. The famous Johnny Hepburn YouTube channel.
Yeah, Johnny Hepburn Trio, but it's also got like yeah, it's duo,
yeah,
blah, 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 up to quintet.
But the last track we played just there was the trio.
That's trio, yeah, from the album.
And the next one, Four Babs, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Oh, yes. Is that, which one's that?
That's not.
Oh, okay. So messed up my notes again. Messed up my notes again. That's the one in the field. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but let's talk about you first. All right. So I'm just interested to know how you kind of got down this path of doing gypsy jazz, because it's not ordinary, you know.
No.
You know, most people that I have in here, I've done, I think, about 90 sessions now since we started in March 2017. And I'd probably say that 95% of them are people who picked up a guitar and just started playing a bit of rock music. Uh-huh. And, you know, so you've kind of gone a little bit left to center with the gypsy jazz. Yeah. Like, has it always been like that? Or were you in a rock band in school?
No.
Or a school choir maybe, or something like that?
When I was, I guess, about 16, I think I started playing guitar in the vain attempt to pick up ladies at parties. And it never worked. So I thought I might as well carry on doing the guitar.
Okay.
Because I quite enjoyed it at this point.
Right.
So I think I borrowed some money. And I bought a Les Paul, vintage gold top Les Paul from the 60s. And I didn't have an amp for it. And literally about a week after I got it, I saw the Meeting of the Spirits video that was on Channel 4 at the time with Larry Coryell, John McLaughlin and Paco de Lucía. And that blew me away, the fact that they could play like they could do on acoustic guitar. So I hopped the Les Paul and got myself an acoustic. And so for the first, I don't know, 10 years or so, I played kind of like what they call it, flamenco jazz, but it's kind of like a fusion between, like, well, the Spanish style and sort of jazz elements, sort of like John McLaughlin, Paco de Lucía style. So I did this for a good few years, and I played with a flamenco guitarist from Andalusia. We had a record deal with a jazz label. We did tours all around the UK, Arts Council tours and stuff. Then the bottom fell out of the market, and I became disillusioned with it. And I'd always be interested a little bit in kind of the Django thing as a guitarist, acoustic guitarist, you know. That's always kind of like bubbling there somewhere under. And a friend of mine said, let's go over to that festival in France, the where he died. They have one every year.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So I went over that, and it just basically was very life-changing for me, because I think predominantly the thing that hit me most was that when I got to see gypsies play, which is, and I say gypsies, like, they're all kind of from the same tribe as Django,
yeah,
Sintes, and I mean, there's other tribes, but generally that kind of, the sort of French, German, Dutch, Belgium, they're kind of Holland, they're all kind of, you know, come from the same mold, I would
yeah,
say.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But although they had their different voices and characteristics on the guitar, they all play with the same technique. And as a guitarist, not being shown how to play and basically developing your own style from watching this, that and the other, to suddenly come across a group of people who played phenomenal guitar, and they all have had the same kind of right-hand technique with a pick, plectrum, was like life-changing. So, yes, I was stupidly decided to relearn the guitar at the age.
And so how long ago was that, sorry?
About 26 years ago.
Okay, so not talking recently.
No,
obviously,
no.
It's something that's quite hard to pick up, right?
Yeah.
The specific gypsy jazz style.
Yeah, yeah, very tricky.
Very complicated.
And back then it was, I mean, I think the standard these days is I've seen the style kind of just blossom over the last sort of 10, 15 years. And definitely when I started, it was just like dodgy VHS cassettes passed round when you had a jam with your mates,
yeah,
you know. But now the YouTube generation is just, you know, you want to learn gypsy jazz, you just, you know, click.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And learn these exercises and that sort of stuff. So
I wonder how many people are doing that now with your channel.
Thousands.
We were just talking.
Well, not with ours, not with mine.
Well, no, but we were just talking, obviously, before we press record for this little bit of the podcast here about your
I
channel.
I think we get music fans who just like kind of jazz music.
Yeah.
You know, bands and playing, you know, we kind of, there's no sort of. Yeah, I think all the gypsy jazz heads go to, like, you know, all the nerdy guitar.
Do you think so?
Oh, totally. Yeah,
okay.
That's what I do.
Fair enough.
After that, I just, basically, as many sessions or jam sessions that I could blag my way onto with basically my CD collection, had a big Gypsy Jazz CD collection. So I was lucky enough over the years to get to play with quite a lot of the people that I listened to, and it was a wonderful learning experience, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Hugely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I still practice. I probably practice more now than ever I do.
Yeah.
Time's short and there's so much to learn.
all right, let's get into this next song we're talking about. So this is For Babs.
For Babs, yes.
Yeah, interesting name for a song. I wasn't sure what you were saying when you first told me the running order for today. For Babs or for Babs or for Babs? It sounds like four candles. What are we doing a sketch show?
I'll give you my shopping. Yeah, this track, it was originally recorded by three gypsy guitarists, Lulu Reinhardt, Geisela Reinhardt, and Zirolu Winterstein, and it's on a T.T. Winterstein quintet album, and it's from the sort of early 80s. At the time, there was kind of gypsy jazz happening, but not really, it was still sort of quite sort of peculiar to Europe and, you know, a little bit over here, a little bit in the States, but it was you know, very much a people's sort of thing and very popular in Europe. And they had a very unique sound, and it blew me away when I first heard it, and the other tracks on their albums. And it's also kind of nice because years later, actually, although he passed away sadly, Lulu Reinhardt, who was a big influence on sort of my playing, is just kind of his approach with it and everything. It was good. I got to play with him quite a lot, and I had a good kind of relationship with him. And yeah, so this track is a version of For Babs, which was recorded in the field at the Samoir Festival in France.
Nice.
And the other two guitarists on it are the magnificent Reno van Hooydonk.
What a name that is.
And what a player too. Reno grew up with some of the top gypsies.
Okay.
He's one of the few kind of gadgets or non-gypsies that really does sound, you know, if you kind of didn't see him and you just heard him, you'd have difficulty telling him apart from hearing a gypsy.
Really?
Play. He's really good. So it was Reno that introduced us to Lulu, sorry. And the other guitarist is Jason, who's the other guitarist in my band.
Yeah.
So the three of us recorded this for a channel. And
not your channel.
No, I better say it.
It's on something else.
It's Patrice's channel.
Okay.
But the song is, it's a great song. Still enjoy playing it. And it's For Babs.
Wonderful. All right, let's give it a listen. Thank you. Okay then, so back in. Waltz Facile is the next song we're going to talk about. So we're kind of a little bit different to the gypsy jazz that we've had.
Yes.
But I want to talk about that in a second. We're going to get into, first of all, because when I obviously spoke to you about this, obviously we've known each other for a while now, since your first session, and I says, you come along and talk about your gypsy jazz, and you said, well, you know, I was signed once upon a time, and I had no idea that you had this record deal, and you were a big shot, and you had vinyls released. It was way back there with vinyls released. Is that what you said? Your first album was on vinyl?
Yeah, the first one on the jazz label. That
you kill it now on vinyl. The way it's going.
I've still got a few copies at home. We could sell them out to DJs and things.
So just tell me, how did it all come about?
I've had two deals.
Okay.
And the first one was when I was playing with the flamenco guitarist, and we got signed pretty quickly, actually. Because there wasn't a lot of what we were doing, the kind of flamenco fusion thing, around at the time. So, and we had a good following, and so I got this a nice couple of album deal out of that, and it was done through a little jazz label. But it was all original stuff, and then around 1999, I kind of wanted to write some more things, and I was getting into the whole Django thing, but a few years now, so I kind of wrote stuff with the sort of that as a sort of theme, I guess, and I just made 100 copies of this album. I recorded it over a bit of time, a few months, I sent a bunch out to to a couple of different records, just, you know, because it was original, and I thought, why not just pitch a couple, you know. And I had a really angry phone call from the woman who was the head of Sony Classical.
Really?
Who was absolutely gobsmacked that I sent her an album. And I wanted to get off the phone because she was just being irritating. She was going, people just don't send in CDs. And I said, well, I saw that you released a one-off Gypsy Jazz album the other year by one of my favourite artists at the time. So I just figured it was worth a punt.
Yeah.
She goes, well, people just don't do it. And it was like, you know.
What an odd thing to do.
I know, surely it was very peculiar. I think she must have been having a bad day or something.
Yeah, the reaction would surely be just ignore it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, to take the time to bring someone back to say we're not interested is... strange.
So there was that, and then a couple of months later, I got a phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning from America.
Okay.
From this very excited American gentleman, just saying, "Hey Johnny, love your album, man. Nice. like to sign you up."
Really? Yeah. Just like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, yeah. So they paid me some money, which is great because I thought it out, and then that was released in America, and yeah, that's the last one. He actually wanted me to do three, but I had young children, and I didn't want the pressure of, you know.
So what was it like? It was a one album sort of deal, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
You deliver the album, and then that's
he
it.
He goes, can we do one a year for the next couple of years? And I'm going, no, I don't want that pressure, you know.
Yeah.
At all, you know. So yeah, I've been quite lucky in that sense.
How prolific are you? Like if you got that, if someone phoned you now, 4 o'clock tonight, tomorrow morning, and said, I want you to deliver me an album a year for the next 5 years. 12,
right now,
20
I'd
tracks.
Probably go for it and just see if I could blag it. Rehash the old days.
Is it when you say the pressure? Is it the pressure of coming up with new material?
It's hard because I mean, you know, the other tracks you're going to play, they're all kind of different. It's not like rum chat like the Gypsy Jazz. You know, there's obviously a few little things, but you know, there's a lot of other influences there, like a lot of classical and that sort of stuff, and you know, so I prefer to do it just as and when, as opposed to, you know, I've got too much time just practicing the guitar, Adam. Yeah. Every time I think, oh, right, you know, writing's for me is quite a long process.
It's
very obsessive. So if I start, you know, I can spend like just weeks and days, you know, when wash, when eat, you know, just sort of get the next bar. And that's what that's what I kind of do. So it's almost, you know, it just takes me away from playing the guitar. Actually, you know,
there's
so many things I want to work on, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
I mean, other people, I guess they just can just crap out albums.
Well, but no, that's it. But I mean, obviously, like, you know, in the previous episodes and previous Seaside Sessions videos, I've started the 5 minute song challenge where, you know, people come in and they'll write music in 5 minutes. And some people are fantastic at it. Some people will do a lot of prep because it's such a nerve wracking thing about writing the lyrics down to whatever.
Yeah,
and
sure,
But, you know, if just through this process of interviewing people, sometimes people say, that, not to say hits, you know, I'm not interviewing people that have had hits, you know, but, you know, their most famous songs, and they have a following, and it's the songs that their fans like when they go to the pubs and whatnot. And, you know, so, you know, it just came to me at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and by midday I'd finished it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's these sort of things that is, well, it happens sometimes.
There's one you're going to play later on, actually, which strangely enough did actually take me. I sketched the whole thing out in about 40 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, I wish the rest of them would have come. Creative constipation, yeah, going on for the rest of it.
I always find it a funny concept when you hear about, I don't know, like famous pop stars, rock stars, whatever, are going away on a writing retreat. To me, it just seems like a jolly up. Like, oh, I need to spend a week in the Swiss Alps. You know, obviously they're going skiing with their mates and getting on the beer every day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really understand it. It seems like a weird concept to me to force creativity, you know?
It's quite popular. You can have like weekends with Chris Difford doing writing, yeah, learning how to write, you know, songs in a cottage in Norfolk and stuff like, yeah, that. So, you know.
Yeah, it's not for me, but I'm not a songwriter. What would I know? What would I know? All right, let's get into this then. So, Waltz Facile. So, this is kind of coming away a little bit from the Gypsy Jazz.
Well, yeah, yes and no. There was Django was playing in Paris and stuff with Stefan, quite a few of his sidemen were other Gypsy players too. One of them in particular was from a family of three brothers, the Ferre brothers, and Barrow, Saran, and Matalo. Barrow was the oldest, and he was regarded as the guitarist in Paris, you know, equal to Django. And he actually stopped. He's on lots of the recordings with Django playing rhythm, but he was also very influential. He wrote these crazy waltzes that were so off-kilter. Unbelievable, fantastic tunes, and you know, Django was reportedly like blown away by Barrow's sort of skill, compositional skill, and everything. But eventually, Barrow, I believe, he gave up playing the guitar because he didn't want to be second best.
Really,
and became a gangster instead.
Oh, nice, nice. Be the best at something. Fair dues.
Future in Gypsy Jazz. So yeah, this is. I mean, this wasn't particularly influenced by Barrow, but it's just another part of the genre that's sort of really kind of quite popular. Some of the waltzes are pretty mental, but this was one I wrote. This was written for this. I did it for this album with the band I was playing at the time for 10 years, Ultra Swing, who were based in Brighton, who had a lot of great gigs with and did a lot of albums with. And this was a waltz on each of our albums. There's usually one or two of mine on there, and this was a waltz I wrote. And it's nice because at the beginning and the end, there's an intro and outro by the remaining violinist who was in our band, Bastonescu, which, you know, is quite a character, but unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. But I've got plenty of recordings of him, you know. So, yeah.
Nice. Okay. I mean, there's something quite beautiful about a waltz. As you were speaking, I was remembering back to episode number 2 of this podcast where I had William Redfern, who's in a band called The Silent Companions, and he said that humanity made a mistake in the 50s by choosing Elvis over Jack Brel. We chose the 4-4, which is very blocky, rather than the nice 3-3, which everything flows and is very nice and smooth. And
well, it's funny because the Barrow style, Barrow Ferre style waltz wasn't necessarily he had this thing about the rhythm not being, you couldn't hear the beat. So all the rhythm, it just has this dun 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 dun,
right,
dun,
okay,
and it's really hypnotic. It's okay. You know, obviously the tune is very, it's in 3, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But like the rhythm underneath, you almost can't separate the beats. Really? It's really hypnotic. Yeah, very very good. That's
very
not
interesting.
The guy playing, my friend Matthew playing rhythm on this one, for some reason decided to go a bit 6-4. You know, these days when I was doing a waltz, it'd be dunk, 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 dunk.
Yeah.
There you go. But all right. Still quite pleasing.
Wonderful. All right, let's give this a listen. This is Waltz Facile. Okay, so a couple of songs left.
Yes.
We're going to kind of split these up, but it's going to be all about the music from here on in. And one of these is 7 minutes long, I believe. Is that right? Is that the next song that we're talking about? So Paquito and Angelique.
Yes.
So Paquito first.
Okay, yeah.
Tell me about this
Paquito's
one.
Paquito's actually from the American album, which was, when I released it, it was called Grand Bazaar. And then the Americans called it Turkish Blend. And yeah, so this track... I'm quite pleased with this one. I wrote it. It's kind of Latin-y, but it's basically a duo with quite a well-known gypsy jazz guitarist on the scene today called Robin Nolan, who's an old friend of mine. And we were doing some gigs and a few workshops together in 1999, and I needed a couple of tracks. I'd written these tunes and just said, "Do you fancy doing these?" So he literally learned them night before the tracks that he played on. This particular one, we only had one crack at it, because literally as soon as we finished the note of this track, the door opened into the studio booth and all his family came in,
who, wow, really?
Who we hadn't seen for a while, because he lives in Holland and they were, at the time, they were living in Liverpool and stuff.
Yeah.
So literally as soon as we finished the last note, he was like, and off.
How
so I never listened to it until we mixed it, and then when I heard it, I was like, "Oh my god! Thank God it's not a dog."
Oh yeah,
because I thought we're never going to go. So yeah,
it's pretty impressive that he did that in one night and
It's not an easy tune to play either, so it's called Paquito, which is basically means little Paco, and Paco's the name of my son. He's not little anymore. He's about 6'2". into his banging grime.
Nice.
Paquito.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, this is Paquito. Let's give it a listen. Okay, so back in the last song. This is about the last song was about your son, Paquito.
Well,
about
there were two. I wrote two children's songs. There's about 12 years in between them.
So Paquito being 7 minutes, and Angelique, when we're about to play, being about
less
2 minutes.
Less than 2 minutes.
Any reason there? Is there some sort of autism?
Well, but basically, I thought, well, I did one for the boy, I might as well do one for the girl. And I'd been asked to do a kind of thing for a children's book, an audio book. So it wasn't going to be like mad gypsy guitars going everywhere. Yeah. As a youth, I was heavily influenced by Cambwick, Green and Trumpton.
Okay.
Actually, no. What was nice when my daughter was born was they were re-showing all that stuff. And I used to love all the music from that. So when I got asked to do this thing, they sent me the pictures, the illustrations. So I used that kind of for inspiration. So it's very simplistic. It's not, you know... it's supposed to be like something something really simple, sweet, almost childlike. There's a little bit, it goes a bit Brideshead Revisity in the middle.
Right.
Before going out on a bit of a waltz.
Nice.
But yeah, just imagine your favourite felt creature frolic around for this.
I love it. Fantastic. Okay, ladies and gents, so that's it. So this is the final track today that we're going to play your recorded tracks, but we're going to come back in with the 5 minute song challenge, which is obviously going to be you guitaring. It's not going to be you singing, because in case you haven't already realized, listeners, Johnny's not a singer. You're a phenomenal guitarist.
And you said to me, I can only stand a minute of your guitar playing, so can I just have
as
a minute?
If I would have said that. I'd do it all day. I'd have an hour of it. No, but we're going to come back in, so it's going to be a roughly minute long. I've been doing this now. I've been prepping everybody because I want to put these videos on Instagram. So a minute only. So your 5 minute song challenge is going to be just guitar.
Yes.
It's going to be great. Looking forward to it. All right, we're back after Thank Angelique. All right then, ladies and gents. So, a little bit of something different with this 5-minute song challenge today from Johnny Hepburn. We're doing a little bit of a gypsy jazz solo. Is that what you describe it as? Or just a guitar solo in general, just in your style?
Yeah. I've got a gypsy jazz guitar.
Gypsy jazz guitar, yeah. But this is just a bit of you.
Bit of me.
All right, mate. Well, floor's yours. Take it away.
Finished, Adam.
Very nice, Johnny. Thank you very much for letting me know. I wasn't sure. I didn't want to interrupt, you know, because it's so lovely, and I wasn't sure when it ended. And that was wonderful. All right, thank you. Thanks for coming.
Pleasure.
Thanks for joining
so
me today.
That was
a magnificent, sort of a different 5-minute song challenge, I think. I'm always up for something different, you know, rather than just trying to scramble around lyrics and rhyme random words together. It's beautiful. It's nice to have a little bit of gypsy jazz slash Latin slash whatever you wanted to call that. Bit of het beer. I love it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this week. And don't forget, if you like the episode, go and give us them ratings on the iTunes store and tell every single one of your friends. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next week.